scratch that. I think I'll make midget clothing. That. I can see it now.
Scratch that.
No, midget clothing's out. Cottage industry's in.
Dear God, scratch that. I need this now.
No, it's usually like, in 10 minutes I've decided I'm already a failure. I think we should move on. Try something else. I tried it for 10 minutes. It didn't work.
You know, the only way that we can cling constructively to the sovereignty of self is through abject ignorance of the truth.
That's a fundamental requirement.
And to evaluate, as in live one's life and be interested in what the truth, as if there were one, might hold for me, you know, is a worthwhile, arguably, right, worthwhile endeavor to find out. Otherwise, without that, without the willingness to be rid of all vanity, we remain in ignorance of the nature of reality.
Why is it such a difficult thing to, well, I want to say grasp, that's not a good word. Why is it so hard to convey? I mean, it seems like people have just become so enculturated, including myself, you know, so enculturated or you know, learned of the ways that
yes,
it's like seems to be all there is. You can easily, I mean, look at the materialism abounds, you know.
Yes.
I think it's inherent in the structure of our brain.
I mean, I guess
it was developed to keep this intact as reality.
What brain?
It's only that, yes, of course, that is a...
One of the ways of looking.
Well, it's a lovely observation, right? But you have to place so much confidence in the stuff that needs to be preemptively apparent for that formula to work. So it's stranger than that.
Well, you know, when the tiger was after us,
yeah,
it developed certain reflexes and responses in order to promote survival.
Right.
I think that mechanism is what I'm trying to describe.
Yes. No, of course.
Back in the 80s?
Huh?
Right back in the 80s. More cowbell.
No, I was just born, so maybe yeah. I don't remember it.
You don't know. No. Meanwhile, tigers only have two big teeth.
Let's say the Darwinian, right, approach for survival of the fittest, of the cleverest. I mean, Terence McKenna will tell you that the folks that were eating mushrooms were the ones that actually had the advantage from a survival and or reproducing point of view, because heightened senses under the influence of hallucinogens made them better able to find food, better able to avoid danger, more creative ways of responding to, let's call it, the material vicissitudes of survivability, and more horny. So they copulated with abandon, found better sources of food, and were better at avoiding the dangers of the savannah. That's what he would say, right?
I think alcohol is now taken over, and that's what this looks like.
Okay, yeah.
I'm kidding.
Plus all that gluten on the savannah, you know that.
But the other curious thing to look at is these models, let's say a Darwinian or chronological approach linked with survivability, suggests an arc, right, of consciousness or experience or primate maturing over geological time.
That's one of the things you could
that contributed to our being so stupid. Yeah. Stupid again, suggesting that whether one discovers an organic interest in evolvement or organic interest in absolute freedom, the metaphors are many, as contrasted with folks that would not find any reason to be in this room and yet would be happy to be over there sitting on a cushion and, you know, having a meditation experience. Or all of these illustrious men and women of letters that have accomplished incredible, right, things in their career and make enviable livings, perhaps traveling the world, speaking about in vivo, micro, hypo, fractal, holographic biology so that you can cure yourself of irritability and insufficiency or even serious health problems by micromanaging the particle wave continuum through the movement of will, right? Or microcurrents of some kind.
Projected thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So what is the nature of the very creative and curious depths of our vanity, of our clinging to, right, specificity, particularization, individuation, at odds meant with the Godhead, and therefore all these kinds of supplications that we indulge in to get a parking spot? Look at our interests.
Yeah.
Even our interests, even if these so-called spiritual tools could be used with any degree of reliability, look how we deploy them.
What are we working on?
You know, I don't know. I want to find a soulmate that won't trigger all of my codependent, self-abnegating, horrific persona and get a parking spot. That's what I want to use this wisdom for. You're like, holy shit.
Maybe hang out on a tropical beach with lots of money.
Well, yeah, the dear departed Philip Berg, right, the master of the Kabbalah Center, not Kabbalah, but the Kabbalah Center of L.A. and New York and various other places, would always find ways of seducing his followers, not just through the scanning of the Zohar, but using these tropical beach millions of dollars metaphors so that people could feel, oh, so that is what scanning the Zohar is going to do for me as I rid my consciousness of Satan, and I'm not talking about gluten now, and then end up on a beach with Rabbi Berg, although I hope he keeps his kaftan on, with pina coladas and money to spare. As we were talking about before, some quality I always forget that word, when we live forever.
Yeah, immortality.
Yeah, some form of immortality.
Yeah.
Because if I can micromanage the molecules of my particle wave continuum, then why shouldn't I be able to resuscitate my corporeal being to the age of 123, right, and ride bicycles, smoke pot, drink alcohol, and continue to fornicate until I'm finally done with it. I mean, that's what the whole immortality game is about. And so we absolutely spit in the face of the miracle of being by hoping to outwit it. And so our relationship with the miracle of being, with God's mercy, God's grace, enlightenment, who cares what we call it, it's fun to kick it around, turns out to be contentious. And that all of these conferences and products are actually contentious because they foment and further the damnable hallucination of one's vanity. Mm. So that's
vanity equaling power to control, yes, in a sense.
Vanity means all of these things, right? Individuation, being a clever guy, clever gal, outsmarting God, having things go my way in all the ways that I would like to have them go, right? Creating one supplication after another to let God know that this isn't really working out for me, and would you please... And I'll participate, mind you. I'm not asking you to do everything for me, God. I'm happy to participate to give you my fair share of my personal will so that shit can go better differently for the likes of me. Mm-hmm. And you know, God is just sitting there being swarmed by suggestions and encouragements, right? And different ways of architecting the universe according to 7.3 billion interested parties. And that's just the primate zone on Earth. I don't know how many planets or creatures made of silicon or carbon are doing this same kind of supplication wherever they may have the privilege of hanging out.
Seems like there's a common... There's common elements in thought amongst people. I would have to imagine that goes beyond just people here on Earth, let's say.
Start somewhere, right? Get over yourself. Start somewhere. But not our dear friend Tom. No. No interest, actually. Right? I've outwitted God, and you will be happy to pay me.
I have the keys to the kingdom.
I have the keys to the kingdom. You will be happy to pay me. I will certify you, train you, rent, sell, or let you lease machines from me. You'll come to conferences. I will even certify you as a practitioner of this hallucination, which is the same thing Byron Katie does. Or if Adyashanti invites someone to teach, it's the same thing.
They all do.
Right?
They want to reproduce themselves.
I will certify you to speak on behalf of me, my accomplishments, my enlightenment, the truth of being, as long as it's clear in your printed literature that Adyashanti asked me to teach. Right? Or I'll certify you as a zero balancer, as a rolfer, as a holographic in vivo asshole from hell, right? It's a pyramid scheme. The whole thing is a pyramid scheme.
They're all the same. Same as General Motors.
General Motors, Toyota, you name it. Go to the car dealer.
Really like a bunch of psychopaths that picked up on little tips about how to kind of entrain and hypnotize people and what, you know, little... things, keywords, whatever.
Psychopath is an insightful observation.
And they're good at it. They're really good at it.
Yeah, they are really good at it.
On the hunger to get some edge on the mystery.
Yes.
That's all they're doing.
Well, it's infectious. It's their own hunger as well. I mean,
it has to be.
I mean, yeah. I don't know that they're conscious.
That's why they're psychopaths.
There was some warning back in the day about the... Yes.
Wouldn't we can see ourselves as others see us?
Yeah.
That was from an Ode to a Titmouse.
Yeah.
Our words.
Right. There was some kind of quote you can find that may have had some biblical references, right, about beware the coming of the false prophets.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right. In parentheses, it said psychopaths.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I remember that.
Yeah, definitely. That's right. Narcissistic psychopaths. Yeah, okay, but, you know, that's just for entertainment purposes. The real task at hand is... You know, you asked a delicious question, which is, why does it appear that discovering what this might actually be none of us can go so far as to suggest what it is, actually. That's too weird for words or confidence. But even the interest, the motive to perhaps discover what it is seems to be slim pickings.
Yeah. Aren't we predisposed to want an answer? So the question is so big and powerful that we don't dare dwell in the question.
Yes.
We're looking for somebody that has had that question, but has come up with an answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's the hook.
I think that evidently there's a lot of people that have not become totally dissatisfied with all the answers they've gotten over their lives. They're still clinging on to hope. Hmm. Hope is like the most irascible pain in the ass. You know, they still think, oh, it's there. I just don't quite get it.
Yeah,
know?
Right.
So I got to learn.
Try the next
better. Time. You know, I got to figure this out and get it better.
Well, we do.
And I do that too.
We end up in a loop of supplication.
Mm-hmm.
Though we haven't figured out who it is that's supplicating who else it might be to get the answer, to get the advantage.
And we assume that everyone just has all the time in the world. Or they're at least going to live to be about, you know, normal 80, 85, whatever. And so they can hope and pray and wait until they get hit by a bus or something strange happens. And they're like, oops.
Yeah, there's, you know, if a certain urgency, irritability is not lit in us, then we are masters of just at justifying our continued vanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, all the retirees.
Yeah.
Are, and at least it looks that way. They've surrendered to the retirement and the monotony and the blasé life. We'll travel, we'll look at things.
Yeah.
There's just that Earth is a landscape of entertainment.
Yes,
they
absolutely.
They ran out of time, finally. It's become more apparent.
Play that string out until it's over. You're just waiting to die.
Optimize the entertainment.
Yeah. Totally.
We cannot explain with any statistical or hypnotic confidence why so few primates take a vital interest in discovering what this is at the unavoidable expense of one's vanity, of one's presumptions, superstitions, and beliefs.
Who knows? Maybe this is just a simulation and there are no other people.
Sure. I'll go with it.
And the goal is complete and total autonomy.
Prompted from the Robin Williams suicide, so I posted, at the very beginning, I figured it was a rumor, and I looked into it, and it's like, doesn't seem to be a rumor, because that was brand new at that point. And so I posted something about, well, this looks real, you know. Something like, because he was in, remember that movie, What Dreams May Come?
Mm-hmm.
And this is like suicide was like the thing you didn't want to do, because then you would go down and you were just so wrapped in your own ego.
He had to go get his wife out of hell.
Yeah, so he had to like, did you see it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I was amazing.
We talked about it.
And so I made some reference to that.
So he should know better.
You would think. He was in the movie.
He was in the goddamn movie.
He had to go underwater for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, he had to step on heads and arms coming up from the ground, trying to suck him into their, you know,
amazing
gooey morass.
I thought it'll be a tough watch the next time, I think.
And then when he went to her, right? When he finally got to her,
as usual,
he made the ultimate sacrifice that he was willing to remain with her in that most horrific state. And then that's when she could not handle the sacrifice and was willing to extricate herself, right?
Wow.
And so they both then lived happily ever after in LSD land.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's how the movie depicted itself. He made a heroic gesture. She could not stand being responsible for his sacrifice.
That was well done.
And so she pulled herself out, right, of that condemnation.
It's fun. Yeah, it's amazing. It took that. But there's a guy I know, kind of, you know, who responded. And this guy is, he's an amazing guy. I mean, I'm sure he has some psychiatric terms that have been pinned on him. You know, he's, I think, been around the institution circuit. And
stuff. Yeah.
But he sounds very, very suicidal.
So do I.
And he's like...
call the hotline.
Look, you don't have to bother with that. You already know you're nothing.
But the thing is, he's sorted through a lot of stuff, and he's discarded it. And he's basically at the point where it's all just atoms and bullshit.
Okay.
You know, like, what's the purpose of it all? It's just meaningless. In other words, he's discarded everything.
Yes.
So he doesn't have anything left.
Well, he hasn't discarded that. The atoms thing.
That's right.
That's where all those fuckers from that conference,
there you go. That's good.
They want to go there. They want to go to atom and molecule and chaos theory and hold something else accountable other than the magic of animation from nowhere, responsible for how biologic systems replicate and create, what would you call it, stasis and survivability.
Yeah, it's a very materialistic...
It sounds like it might be onto something, but when you turn over that rock, it's like, dudes, you haven't really budged. You haven't budged
there
from...
There is no rock to turn over.
Yeah, you haven't budged from it. You're still coming up with a more refined hallucination for what you want to hold responsible.
Yeah, little smaller particles of stuff.
So your friend has discarded, let's say, superficialities...
Yeah.
But then, of course, and understandably so, he's aligned himself with the materialist or scientific, right, view, whether it's string or quantum, right, or relativity, or go where you want. And then, of course, he has to confront, as do any of us that make the journey, the meaninglessness of trying to tie this miracle to... right, some kind of materialist...
Right.
Origin or Genesis. Yeah, he's fucked. He's totally fucked.
Well, he's caught in a trap. And, you know, there's no way out.
There's no way out. But the problem is, I mean, we can't get inside the head of someone whose neocortex and serotonin uptake has taken a sharp right turn that is, you know, now overwhelmed with depression, with anxiety, with apprehension, with paralysis, with meaninglessness. I mean, those themes are really provocative. You know, even the best therapy, unless, of course, it's a heroic therapy like LSD or mushrooms or ecstasy, right? No kind of discussion could be helpful to draw someone like that out of the readiness to take their own life, to end their biologic existence.
But the interesting thing is,
he
he's done this several times when I've encountered him. He will make reference to he doesn't dwell on it because it's too far out. incredible. I mean, it sounds very psychotic, you know, machinery, you know, some machinery that's causing things to happen that's extra terrestrial or beyond human of some sort.
There's no question.
I mean,
the guys from the conference are talking about, let's just call it incredible microbiologic machinery or even sub-biologic machinery where the interface between the inert atom or the inert molecule becoming a constructive, anti-inertial, sentient system. So that is extraterrestrial machinery. He's not wrong, except that we're not looking to outer space for it. We're seeing it right here within the 100 trillion cells of you.
I kind of think that he actually sees it somehow.
I've seen it. It's killer. It's awesome. I think we all have the, you know, the capacity to feel the absolutely beyond hierarchical expression of this, call it machinery, through dream, through vision. I've seen it.
Yeah.
Whoa! I mean, it's meticulous, really, beyond measure. And that's what it shows you.
Yeah.
And no matter where you might look on its surface, it's doing dances of miraculous complexity and or quantum entanglement that, you know, the representative mind cannot track, cannot fathom.
Yeah.
So the vision of it is an instantaneity. It's a revelation which cannot be reduced to the material expression of what we might call word forms.
Mm-hmm.
And even the most exquisite artist, you know, with rapidograph level skill, right, couldn't possibly represent it on a canvas as strangely as it's able to represent itself to itself in, let's say, your hindbrain, your neocortex, whatever the visionary aspect of you or us is remarkable beyond imagination.
Well, it's interesting that this seems to happen, this desire to go deeper in between all of the bullshit that's happening, just to dive down as far as you can, down the crevasse of whatever is, seems to occur randomly, whether, I don't know if it's... there's any connection. I'm not seeing it with intelligence or
I mean, amongst the culture, right?
Or, yeah.
In other words, the people you know that are willing to have a conversation this one.
Yeah. With maybe a couple, and then it's kind of the weird conversations that's, you know, per individual proclivity, you know.
Yeah.
But,
and they're all
it's
old.
Random.
And they're all too old, yeah. God damn it.
That's my little kick that I want to go in.
Why are they all old?
All
those people at Peter Brown's living room, they're all too old. So old. Crusty 60 and 70-year-olds. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, there's no cute guys or gals. Yeah. Well, you have to go to the, you know, the yoga schools for...
I have to go pretend for a while.
Yeah, you have to go pretend. You have to go to the yoga school. where people with hormones still dwell. Young people interested in mucosal encounters. Okay. Yeah, not here. Sorry.
Well, I didn't say it had to be a mucus. I don't know what the hell that word was. A mucus encounter. Exchange.
Yeah.
You made that part up.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Self-revealing.
I didn't say anything about swapping mucus with anyone.
Yep. Yeah, that's a hell realm. Poor guy's in a hell realm.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, mushrooms, LSD, take something. Get out of there.
Yeah.
Climb up out of there because it's not real. But again, you know, whatever.
Well,
you know, Robin Williams had, by virtue of his celebrity and his wealth, access to... He could have gone to South America and done ayahuasca.
Why would you die at least? That's what I was thinking. Why would you want to hang yourself? God, sleeping pills, Xanax, Vicodin. I would have had a serious part.
I mean, why medicate yourself with alcohol, which is a depressant?
Yeah.
I mean, I know alcohol takes the edge off of my, you know, morose despair. I mean, I get that. But a guy that was that progressive in his professional life could have gone down to South America.
He bought into what his therapy group was telling him, I think.
Jesus.
I mean, that's
mad, bad,
I mean, you know, and he's always prone to, I mean, he was you know, prone to this hope thing.
Well, look at his look at the magic of his neuronal compositions that made him a master comedian that he was.
Manic depressive.
I mean, he had to have already been, you know, to some degree bipolar or synaptically extraordinary to conjure that many voices, that much, you know, physical comedy, right? To go from, you know, gender to places and times in history, right? He was able to adopt and adapt to unimaginable qualities of personas on an instant. His synapses were so good, and he had the plasticity to do it nonstop. I mean, around him, the average person was shaken to the core.
Yeah.
Laughter was the only thing we could do around someone like that.
Could explain the tactile nature of his exit.
Yes, of course.
You know, it was in direct the opposite of what he was living.
Well, imagine the access that he had to demons. Had to have been just as robust and miraculous as his access to comedic persona.
Yeah.
Right? You can't have one without the other. So if he had a synaptic field that was that open and that brilliant, his demons must also have been, I mean, beyond the pale.
He was looking for something tangible.
I saw him in...
Strangulation, is it?
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, tangibility. Because perhaps we're talking about not him per se, but, you know, the nature of consciousness being so elastic and being so overwhelmed with that quality of elasticity that something tangible would be a relief.
Be desirable.
He did a documentary with dolphins some years ago.
Like he had a decision to make in the
view. No, of course. But I remember a very poignant scene in that documentary. And the reason I think they may have, you know, encouraged him to do it is because of his reputation and the humor and, you know, so that if you were a documentary maker and you wanted to raise consciousness about, you know, a brilliant animal, he could be a very valuable mouthpiece for that.
Mm-hmm.
But what was real fascinating was he comes out of the water after an unspeakably profound and intimate encounter with a male dolphin under the surface, which was filmed, which you could, you know, voyeuristically enjoy. He comes back on deck, and you're waiting for him to do Robin Williams. He was struck dumb with wonder and the cessation of all vanity.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I was like, wow.
Yes.
One of the most poignant moments that at least, you know, was witnessable in his filmed career was that.
That was no acting there.
There was no acting. There was no attention seeking. Yeah. All of his synaptic brilliance and cleverness was just muted to zero.
And for a change, it wasn't a depressive over over the other side.
That's right. That's right. And I was like, wow, nice hit for Robin Williams.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah. Anyway, he hadn't, like you point out, what choice did he or any of us have for anything, especially if this is being construed by either an extraterrestrial or micro-terrestrial biologic machine that's doing shit at a level of detail at the cellular and microcellular level that we're only first beginning to be even aware of, let alone to chart, right, its causal impact.
It may be that since dark matter and dark energy accounts for 90% of the stuff that is theorized to be in the universe.
That's right.
We only apprehend with our what we're walking around with, that 5 or 7%.
Yeah.
And we need to get to the another dimension.
Yes.
Why Lucy was fascinating.
Thank you. Yeah, sure. Lucy was fascinating.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you could open up maybe we, there is a whole world to see.
All the critics I read of Lucy, all at least in, you know, my point, our point of view, missed it. Mm-hmm. Missed that it was an evocative, though of course naturally clumsy, right,
mm-hmm.
way of illustrating, of animating the arc of consciousness.
Wait a minute, Lucy, you don't mean the...
the movie.
Oh.
Did you see it?
No.
Go see it.
Lucy?
Sure, would someone like to come get me out of my fucking house?
Yes, let's go see it. We'll take Francine out.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, oh. I'm in like house arrest. I barely.
Is it,
well, it's still playing at the barn, I think.
Yeah, pick a night.
Oh, it's a big. No, well, I'm going on.
I'll go see it again.
Yeah, I would too.
All well, right.
Sounds cool.
Well, you paid for the last one. We'll treat you to this one.
Yeah. What night are we going?
Well, let's find out.
Oh, that's great. So that's a nice movie out to see.
Oh, fabulous.
Because it's slim pickings out there.
So, Lucy illustrated, right, at least to my glorious and gleeful satisfaction, this arc of, call it consciousness through the filter of vanity, going the distance, right, to rid itself of all affliction, all incarceration, all limitation, to rid itself of appearing to be the consequence of anything material.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Lucy went.
Ultimately, yeah.
Yeah. And the critics missed it. They thought it was too, you know, too fanciful, poetic license with the science to have any merit. Mm. I'm like, well, that's because you assholes who have no idea that self-realization is real and available.
This isn't the one with Scarlett.
But it's not scientific.
Johansson.
Yes.
Oh, that's the one you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
Where she supposedly can use 100% of her.
That was the metaphor, right. So the metaphor for realization, which is the unencumbered, the revelation of unencumbered, call it reality,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, it was too weird to, let's say, use that kind of Osho-ic vocabulary.
Uh-huh.
So they used the metaphor of, you know, the 15% of the brain, 20%, 25, 30, and so she's manipulating nanoparticles,
right?
Then she communes with, you know, computers to become a gooey, you know, morass of plasma. And
they're using what they got.
They're using what they got. Yeah, but it was, but it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. So that's what we have here. This is the revelation of the, right, the finality, if there is such a thing, the culmination of consciousness, as if there were such a thing, being beyond limitation. This is it. That's what is so curious, that you could say as a kind of a practical obstacle for our investigation, is we somehow can't fathom that. You mean my crappy life, where I sometimes forget to clip my own toenails, happens to be the heart and mind of the Godhead? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, your crappy life, with all of the, you know, flotsam and jetsam and mucosal smegma that you stink from, is the Godhead. Yeah, that's it. And we have a hard time appreciating that we actually possess, though possess, of course, is strange, the sensitivity, the refinement, the capacity for this to see itself through no filter whatsoever and actualize in our experience. That's what the yogis have been trying to say for all of these millennia. The way they've said it, of course, is a little, you know, it leaves a little bit to be despired, to be whatever that phrase
distilled
is.
Distilled or something? No.
Yeah.
Distilled, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a nice whiskey.
Because we're trying to get over all of the self-serving superstitions that have been imposed upon the culture, self-imposed upon the culture, so that we're basically shamed into being sinful, unavailable, unworthy consumers of crap. rather than being made of awake itself and absolutely up to the task of actualizing that revelation. Mm-hmm. If there were such a thing as a species and or the maturation of the consciousness of the species, it would be that. Yeah. That it, yeah. It's possible for us to transcend the limitations of all superstition, explanation, and gross or subtle materialist thinking, as in either an extraterrestrial or submicrobial machine that's responsible for this, and go right into the heart of the antimatter, right? Mm-hmm. Go right into the heart, which is suggested by the dark matter. Mm-hmm. Because there's not enough stuff that could be held accountable for, right, the gravitational integrity of the visible universe. And so we're like scratching our heads that there's no reason that this shouldn't be flying away from itself at perhaps more chaotic speeds than it already is. Because there's really not enough stuff to hold any meaningful integrity. And that's why dark matter, right, has to be conjured, has to be brought into the equation. Because the gravitational wave equations don't work with respect to what's observably available to account for the cosmic gravitational pull.
Right.
Yeah.
So the bitch is that the equipment, the state that we're in, only can make really a mathematical representation.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get and experience those aspects.
This is part of the conundrum of a yogic, call it a yogic, mm-hmm. discovery. Here it is. Mm-hmm. This is actually the full, unabashed actualization.
100%.
100% of the most subtle articulation that we could possibly utter or imagine. This happens to be it. So we could say there is a quality of refinement, quality of subtlety, that which is not accumulative, it's not additive, because that's the materialist agenda, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We have to take a step back. Take another step back. It's like at every Grateful Dead concert, somewhere in the middle, someone on stage. It was usually what's his name, the rhythm guitar player, right? Bobby would say, "Take a step back. Take another step back," and he would ask the audience to just create a little more room so the poor, you know, LSD-strewn fuckers at the front of the stage wouldn't get crushed to death. Take a step back. So we can benefit from his, you know, kind encouragement. Right. Take a step back. So we have to become somehow comfortable with the texture of liquidation right. as contrasted with the texture or the impulse of acquisition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that you have to, but it will fucking make you.
It will make you, right? Yeah.
Believe me.
Yeah, I hear you, sister. Yeah, you have to. Yeah, you can't. Because as long as one's present, call it biocosmic, holofractal expression is vectoring in the direction of acquisition. Mm. It's samsaric. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yes. Now, this goes back to when we were talking about the Darwinian model of why this looks the way it does. Mm-hmm. It flatlines that whole approach. You see, because this presence is not actually encumbered by right? Any kind of arc of any kind of evolutionary arc, right?
Impossible.
It's impossible. No. So that's fun. We can talk about evolutionary arcs because they're thrilling. They're kind of fun. But we can also see that it's not possible for this right now to be the consequence or encumbered by any kind of evolutionary arc. So then you're free if you want to place that order, right? One from column A, two from column right. If you want to place that order, you can see that presently, as in here, now, this, though there is no here or now or this, you are not the product of any arc of evolutionary predisposition. That frees you, right, from any kind of materialist bequeathment or consequence. Yes? Mm. So that is a way of articulating, though it's, you know, it's weird to articulate, the notion of stepping back.
You know, I used to wonder how in the world, you know, these old texts, these old Hindu texts and the Bhagavad Gita and, you know, and all the Vedas and all that stuff, it's like, how could there be such wisdom so long ago? You know, it's
right.
Like there's this wisdom that underlies the whole thing.
Yes,
you know,
clearly.
And so,
right,
the fact that we've become, in many ways, in certain ways,
stupider.
Evolved in the worldly sense and in knowledge base. So what? You know, it's like, what's the difference? You know, it's like this.
Sure,
we're talking about something that.
Yeah,
doesn't relate.
That's right. Yes, so even though it might appear culturally, sociologically, right, historically, that we're stupider today than when those wisdoms were laid down on papyrus, or however the hell they express themselves.
Psalm.
Yeah, psalm, right.
Psalm, yeah.
Song, psalm, yeah. Sure. Still, we're not the consequence of any kind of evolutionary disappointment. Yeah. So we have the capacity and sensitivity to see, feel, right into the heart of the irrefutable nature of the magic of consciousness itself, and not pay any homage whatsoever to the slightest materialist view, because this is not causal. It's a causal. It has no reliable building blocks.
It's not necessary to do that anyway. It's like, if you want to every once in a while, great, but don't really have to.
Well, part of the training, and I think it's a fair word to use, part of the training is to see with our own availability how conditioned our present way of thinking is.
Yeah.
How it's already self-sabotaging because of the millions of presumptions that we hold dear, that we don't even know we hold dear, that our present experience is the consequence of something other than ourselves. And it's not. There is nothing other than ourselves, yourself, and this presence is not encumbered, nor is it the consequence, nor is it the source certain of something that might happen a moment from now, because that's just as absolutely free as whatever this is. Stepping back from the reflex of acquisitive consciousness, right, is a kind of a yoga. It's a different quality of engagement. And it can't just be engaged with mentally.
No, I would say that's not even...
It's not even on. It's not even on the ship.
No.
Right? Yeah.
You Hi. Know.
Yeah, we left that dock a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's still there, but you can't explain it mentally. You can't convey it to anybody. It really has to be felt.
Yes.
Even communicated wise, it has to be felt.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So we obviously, in conversation, in the gift and the privilege of coming together to have a conversation, what's really going on is the magic, the yogic magic of playing with, to coin a phrase from, who was that crazy yogi from Pondicherry? His name escapes me for the moment. Supramental. We're feeling this supramentally.
It's above mentality.
Yes. Above mentality. Right.
Yeah, it's like a sense of source. It's interesting.
Yeah. Now that is a lot of fun too, because it's fascinating that we can actually feel this supramentally in each other's midst, through the vehicle of, call it, rumination or conversation or just the pure radiant nature of availability.
It can come through for anything, I guess.
Of course, but of course.
This is a nice social way to do it.
Sure. Yeah.
It's immersive.
It's reinforcing.
Well, I feel like it is valuable to see in some way. It does seem like we've been habituated we think that the only way to learn is by speaking, communication, talking.
Right.
He said something, I understand it, I now learn something. But that's not actually how we learn.
No.
At all.
No, holographically.
At all. It's
right.
It's bizarre.
You're right.
And when you see that, you're like,
right.
Oh.
Yeah, we learn holographically. Yeah.
That's not even.
What do they say? It's like 80% is nonverbal, or, it's even from that.
Yeah, it could be 100.
Yeah, I think it's 100.
We don't really know what the, call them, mechanisms are, biologically or submolecularly. We don't know what the plenum and vibratory morphic resonances are that are, you could say, more subtly responsible for learning, for communication, for the maturation of consciousness, for the sensitivity of feeling and seeing what's irrefutably present without story.
We have no access to what generates what we say.
We don't, do we?
We don't have access. We don't know what is doing it. We don't know where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And we just recognize an impulse.
Yeah.
And then we say something.
Yes.
And I have to say, I think when we say something, when I say something, I hear myself saying it, and some other part of my brain is like, what? Or reacting in a different way than the part that said it.
Yeah. That's right. You can feel this kind of lovely schizophrenia or multiple personality.
Every time you have an email sent out, you must you reread them.
Yeah.
You clearly are going to confront, where the fuck is that coming from?
Yeah, they're hysterical to me.
Like, you just roll up your...
Yeah. And I, you play around with... Where is the genesis of your own brilliant conception?
Mm.
From moment to moment.
Mm.
It's not your personality. It's not knowledge. We don't know what that is anyway. What is the holofractal, submicrobial, subphotonic nature, Higgs bosonic nature of the present conception that's arising wherever you may be sitting?
Mm-hmm.
Non-human, to me, it seems like, anyway. It's an interesting area to explore.
Well, it's wonderful. It's certainly you could say, outside the realm of what we typically refer to as human.
I'm going to tell you what happened today.
Okey-doke.
It's absolutely in this realm from my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
We emptied out a client's house,
uh-huh.
put the furniture in a truck, put a pad from U-Haul between two pieces of furniture, redid the floors, brought the shit back in.
Nice.
There on the side of the cabinet, this expensive old fucking cabinet,
right.
and this coffee table,
yeah.
somebody looked like they got a goddamn
scratch
steel burr
shit out
and
of it.
Ground the shit out of the wood.
Ouch!
Oh! It's ugly. What was in that pad?
Staple in the pad.
I,
who knows?
It's like, where did that come from?
Oh, my God.
What a cosmic intervention.
Yeah, yeah.
Wanted to stick it to me.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And so
exactly.
I looked at that week after week. I had to convince her, don't worry, I'll disappear.
Yeah, you can.
I had no idea what to do.
Right.
Other than I grabbed some shit in the shop. And today I went down, wiped some putty on. I mean, I had no conception of what would disappear.
Yeah, how would you do it?
Put some putty in, put some stain on it, rubbed it. Fuck, it disappeared.
Nice.
I did two of them.
Wow.
I mean, just bad.
Brilliant.
So where do they come from?
Yeah.
I didn't have any experience or background to be convinced that I could do it.
Right.
I just grabbed some shit and did it.
Yeah, nice.
So this is exactly...
Yeah.
Who knows where the
Brilliant.
Crap comes from.
Well, all of our expressive capacities, radiantly expressive capacities... Hunger, chewing, digestion, water absorption, nutrient burning,
freaking thing.
Krebs cycle, elimination, seeing, feeling, tasting, touching, thinking, speaking,
what
is magic.
What is it?
Right? It's all pure magic. How did we come up with the absolutely tragic hubris to call it I?
Right.
And then live with the painful vanity which makes a PhD say, never contact me again. A PhD who professes to make a career out of being interested in the mind of God.
Right. It's unbelievable.
Fuck you!
Well, he couldn't get past bullshit. Uber, he could have got past.
Oh, yeah, that's what pushed him over the edge, right? Sure, yeah. Right, a likely story. A likely story. So here we are, whatever here is, we and are is, we don't know. Because your present experience is not the consequence of anything. Dreamed by nothing. That you could actually hold responsible for the dreaming.
There's no reference.
And evocatively suggests a three-dimensional durability outside of yourself in which you burn dinosaur farts to go from entertainment venue to entertainment venue. Whoa.
I mean, it seems like a reverse trance. You know, this is the trance state, and then you dream, which is like the neutral ground, and then you come into deep sleep, which is wide awake, you know, somehow.
Well put, yeah.
I mean,
yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. What we call the typical primate experience, articulated so well by Huffington Post and Fox News, is the trance.
Yeah.
Is the trance. Yeah. And the miracle of unencumbered being, which is this, is just low-hanging fruit, really. Your liberation is low hanging fruit.
It doesn't take any work.
And take the fruit, because it's not the tree of knowledge. So you're not going to be cast out of anywhere if you bite into that apple.
Or get magic powers.
Yeah. Once we can articulate, and not, I don't mean just speak about, you know, impersonally. I mean articulate, in this case, suggests that you have the confidence to see this for yourself purely autonomously and not under the coercive or seductive influence of anyone. That's what articulate is suggesting, right? Mm-hmm. Once you can articulate the revelation that your present experience is strangely ambiguous and all the other things you could say about it, as in arbitrary, as in acausal, non-lasting, not actually appearing in space or time, as your confidence in this revelation becomes more easeful, then you can't help but to slide right into home plate. Take a step back. Take another step back. Yeah. We can become sensitive to and privy to the reflex of acquisition, the reflex of assertion or explanation of justification. Those are all steps forward. That's why we would be wise to kill ourselves. But I'm not advocating biological intervention, right?
Yeah. Metaphorical.
Metaphorical intervention, which is take a step back. Get the fuck over yourself. Become comfortable with Teflon as the only consciousness you've got. Which is not an arriving consciousness. It's not an inhabiting consciousness. It's not a story told consciousness. Though those are all fine. We're not, right? It's not a baby in bathwater kind of thing. Go to Teflon. Go to this presence, which is already here of its own accord, free for the biting, and drop all merit. Once you feel it, it will inform you. It'll just come back at you, come back for you. Now, in a sense, you've established in your own experience, not necessarily through any cathartic event, that your present experience is indeed an open window into awake, into unabashed revelation. Once you establish that your present experience is indeed the only portal there is, and thankfully the only one you need.
And you do not need a guide. You do not need a...
There are no, it's not possible. No one can be a guide. I mean, you can get blown halfway across the universe from, let's just say, a well-established guru, right? You can. That's fun. Why not twirl out beyond the solar winds and see how it feels? Those gifts you can get, right? But they're non-sustaining.
No, I'm talking
you
about
have
the
to integrate them in some way. Yeah. That you're doing it, but how you integrate it is anybody's.
I'm referring to the industry.
Uh huh.
Grown up.
Right.
Around using that notion, and then offering you a methodology for that pay for more.
Yeah. There is no methodology for the presence of liquidation.
No.
There is no methodology for the absolute cessation of all merit, of the continuity of self. Mm. There is none. Though it seems so few are willing to emphasize that as an appropriate disclaimer before they take your money.
Yeah, well, failure is not the best marketing.
So they know it and they do it anyway? They believe it or...
Well, they have to have...
I don't know.
Well, they have to at least believe, trick themselves or whatever into thinking that they have some kind of answer, even though they may... lean the evidence a little bit.
Well, it's not possible to have a retreat of 300 people paying $1,400 a head to do this. No. You're not going to find 300 people.
Or to tell them, hey, failure, complete and total fucking failure, is your best friend.
Yeah, that's right.
Go try it.
Yeah, can't wait to go to that retreat.
Go get them.
Right. Thanks for coming. Now go out there and fail. Completely.
Yeah.
Right? Go out there and
don't
lose
come
it
back
all.
Here again.
Yeah.
Well, then you have those traditions that just sort of shave your head and eat minimally and
Right. The minimalist
failing.
The minimalist tradition that
controlled
participates
failing.
In controlled renunciation.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That doesn't count. You have to fail.
Well, those don't work.
Yeah.
I mean, they might work culturally in some remaining places in the world where the kind of commitments to getting up at 3:30 and doing your 45-minute meditation and then, all that stuff looks like it creates a certain kind of order within the social structure.
That nun who was engaged to her,
movie star.
She did Elvis.
Uh-huh. She gave it all up.
She
went to be
took some vow of silence and some sort of convent.
Yeah.
I mean, the woman is beautiful. She's serene. She's like the happiest person I've ever seen. So.
I see.
She's come out.
On the date or after she took the vows?
No, all these years
later. Later. I see.
When I interview her, she just seems so joyful.
Yeah. I've seen it. I have friends. I mean, I call them friends.
Yeah.
They wouldn't call me one. But that's true for a lot of people I know. who have taken vows, and have committed themselves to, simple living in robes and stuff. And, they do find an incredible delight and joy in living within the context of, that kind of Western Buddhist culture, heavily influenced by, Eastern and Asian traditions. Yeah. Yeah, they're happy. They are much less involved with and overwhelmed by the chaos that we encounter in the so-called, world of media and competition and rungs on ladders climbing to hell.
Aren't there any that where they get up at 10 or 11? And
well, we'll start one.
Maybe if you go to Alaska,
it could turn out to be really popular.
Sunrise is a little later.
Yeah.
You should go.
Why get up at 5:30? Why don't we just we'll bring you breakfast in bed and a newspaper, and then why don't you join us in the meditation hall around 10:15? I like it.
Sleep in seminars.
Those would be really popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, they do that on the really luxurious resorts.
Uh-huh.
It's not at all painful. It's quite
Miraval or Canyon Ranch. Or,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You have to pay a lot of money.
Have you guys?
Yeah. Yes. What's our instinct? You mention a nun who appeared as if she made it, right? That her presentation, her grace, her innate compassion was enviable, absolutely, right? So is that what we want to inhabit?
I mean, that's her
thing. And I'm not talking about the nun
everybody
thing.
Everybody has a thing. That's her thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, it's not important that she was a nun versus a fast food worker. Right? Really.
Yeah. I mean, there can be joyous fast food workers, too.
I hope.
Yeah, they're not making documentaries about the really happy McDonald's employee.
She's separated from all the...
That I know of, anyway.
Well, I mean, he was talking about, like, you know, talking about going out and failing, and so some people don't have a lot of things they want, so giving it all up for to marry Jesus instead of Elvis is like the be all and end all, I guess.
Right. Well, I see those as interchangeable, but
yeah.
there's two kind of kings in my world.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So.
Yeah.
It kind of, it teases out the question,
yeah.
Right? What are we after? What do we want to occur in our lives that makes a kind of a trajectory toward enlightenment, awake, whatever, worth doing, right? What are we attempting to fulfill? That's a good question. Is it, what is it? I mean, freedom from thinking, freedom from vulnerability, freedom from time, freedom from the pressure of making a living, freedom from failed relationships, freedom from biological urges. What the fuck is it that we want to feel or not feel? What do we want the actualization of any endeavor, including the absurd endeavor of enlightenment, to resolve to?
Well, the encumbrance that we seem to suffer. We want that resolution.
Mm, that's a good answer.
All right, you got takers.
It's a different answer for different stages of life, different ages, different... it's not going to be the same.
It can't be, can it?
It can't be.
Yeah.
You can't ask my little granddaughter, 7.5 months. She's just like...
She's there.
She's there.
The question's not relevant.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, really, like what?
Next.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, and then all these kids get older.
Yeah.
And they're engaged.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Well, at this stage of our lives, being too old to matter.
Here we go again. Yeah. What stage am I in?
I don't know. You're at that stage. That stage over there, that youth stage or something.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, what does it look like now? Because it's not what I imagine or hope or feel it to be from a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, right? Yeah. What's the resonance that's appearing in your consciousness, in your firsthand experience, which provides you with the wonder, the curiosity of awake in whatever metaphor works for you?
It's
like being slapped in the face really hard.
Okay. That's a good one.
Well, we can do that.
Yeah. Right.
It already has. It's done.
Yeah. What, let's say unencumbrance, right, is a kind of a cheerful metaphor.
Cheerful.
Right? To kick around. Okay, so not that we could ever really agree, but all right, you know, for a few minutes we'll, yeah, unencumbrance sounds good. So then, well, what is it? How does it express itself in your firsthand experience?
It's a daily surprise.
Daily surprise.
Well, I would say that it's just an undercurrent, which, you know, is a pain in the ass. You know, I mean, who wants to be encumbered? You know, it sets a feeling tone. And because I invest in it, you know, stupidly. You know, so I want to get smart and not invest in that anymore. And maybe that'll actually change my behavior so I won't have good cause to feel encumbered.
Right.
Because I do blame it on my behavior.
Okay. That's interesting. So there's a lot of animation there. A lot of presumed responsibility.
Yeah.
And or causal, right, impacts that have to do with your either deliberate, unconscious, semi-conscious behavior.
Yeah.
Being accountable or the reason why you experience or suffer encumbrance. And what you could be doing, should be doing, once in a while, give it a whirl to become unencumbered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
We had a conversation on that Tuesday night, now defunct.
Yeah.
In which that notion of state change came up.
Yeah.
And that has really been useful.
Uh-huh.
There are so many things that would create a heightened sense of living, either an aggravation, an upset,
sure,
or intensity. I kind of pulled the plug on a lot of them.
Nice, yeah.
Fuck them.
Yeah.
It just is what it is.
Yeah, micromanaging our discomfort. Yeah. Is a hell realm.
It is. and when you keep doing it to yourself, so you have something to micromanage, that's insanity.
Yeah, and as much as we suffer by feeling apprehensive, vulnerable, or insecure in the first place, the reflex to then micromanage it, which may appear as an attempt to medicate or mitigate it, actually reinforces it. And we know this. But we don't stop.
Right.
Yeah. We think, oh, right? No, I really don't want to suffer. It's like, well, how come you keep,
That's right.
How come you keep throwing gasoline on the fire?
But there's every opportunity.
We think that somehow that's going to fix it. And then, I mean, that's what we've been told. If we were told anything, and if there were other people, that's what we've been taught.
Okay.
Do something about it.
Yeah.
You have to do something about it.
Have some perception of an idealized state. An encumbrance implies something interfering with an idealized state. What if encumbrance disappears because you no longer process it as...
Well, U.G. Krishnamurti said, if you stop looking for roses, you won't find any thorns.
Stop looking for roses. Is consciousness any more than present to watch a consciousness?
Nice question. Yeah, what is it?
What the fuck is it doing?
Is that
all it's doing?
I don't know.
It's just a witness to itself?
What else could it be doing?
I don't know.
Yeah. If there's nothing other than it, what could it possibly do except be a strange witness to itself? Yeah.
But that's doing a lot, in a sense. I mean, you know.
It depends on how you fill up your library, right? Your library might have, and for good reason, a wonderful array of volumes, which is, there's a lot. Some other library could have an old copy of Mad Magazine, and that's it. Yeah. But
it's true, even the doing, like your whatever might just look like a lot of doing, and that's cool too. Whatever.
Stepping back is the emptying of one's library.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice action.
So that there's a direct encounter with unencumbrance. Not the consequence of righteous or semi-righteous behavior.
Right.
Yeah. So let's say you remind yourself on the way to work or whatever, oh, there I go again, right? Indulging in the behavior that I know conjures apprehension and psychological time and insecurity and a to-do list that I'll never get to, and I stopped caring about that shit years ago anyway, right? That's being created in real time. And there's therefore a reflexive investment to fill my library with those tones, which turn out to be tombs.
Oh, man. That's three in a row, man. That's...
So we entomb ourselves by misapprehending what's actually, in quotes, actually present, creating a superstructure of mentation or behavioral consequences or identification on the raw nature of what is appearing to appear. And all of a sudden, I'm at a in the midst of a university library at Cornell. That's how many volumes I got going. My Dewey Decimal System reaches to the sky like Jack's beanstalk. So drop it. Get out of the library. Or empty the shelves. A match will do, or a sale. Doesn't matter. A sale. Sell everything. Give it away. Just drop it off at the local used bookstore. There you go.
I'm thinking of a Soji screen with the face of Alfred E. Newman that opens up.
Nice. Another way, yeah. Like to the out of doors.
Back to those magazines, remember?
Yeah, that's right. They had panels, yeah.
Yeah, the mix.
That was my favorite.
Fold here.
On the side, you know.
Yeah. I think that was Dave's library you were talking about.
Yeah, it may be. It may be.
It was mine, too.
The myth of disclosure is a metaphor for what the fuck you're talking about.
Okay.
That's awesome.
The myth of disclosure.
Yes. Well, there's a disclosure. The ETs are going to show up, and somehow they've been here all the time, but they're hidden.
Yeah.
And it's going to pop out.
Yeah. Fine.
They want to scare the shit out
we're
of you.
That's
what they're
going
to do.
Yeah, realization is peekaboo.
Yes. Disclosure. Disclosing. Well, you fucking dummies.
Yeah.
You've been sold a bill of goods, and you ate it.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. Consciousness encumbered is valuing disclosure. As if I've actually disclosed something to myself about my present experience, identified in a nano moment what could possibly be related to my experience, and then come up in another nano moment with an imaginary remedy or disappointment in myself for once again going down the road of a familiar behavioral path that is kind of an entombment.
It's a really horrible addiction.
It is.
NA and AA.
Oh, yeah.
Bad.
This is
no strength.
This is 12 steps.
I know.
This is 12 step. I mean, I presume to be conscious. My life has become unmanageable. I'm not even old enough to drink. And my life's already unmanageable because someone said I was born. That's a fairly deep-rooted
step one
addiction.
Remember that whole born thing? Just let's get rid of that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all of the substance and behavioral seductions that we may participate in to create a state change, right, a shift in the serotonin profile, right, are all after the fact of the primary addiction, not to paraphrase our friend Paul Hederman, but the primary addiction is to self. The imagination that you are the consequence or presenting as an encumbered, right, soul, an encumbered person, an encumbered bioplasmic expression. You're not. You're just fucking not. Step back. Take another step back from every hint that you're the consequence of anything, or that you could possibly be encumbered by behaviors, by reflective or discursive thinking, by being entombed in a, you know, temporary bioplasmic sheath. And where do you have to go? To the Wawa? No, this is good. Right here is where you make the discovery. You make it here.
There's a lot of really interesting, subtle nuances to that. Like, you can't just say, oh, yeah, you're not a self.
No, you can't.
Because you can, in some bizarre way, manipulate and fuck that up in so many different ways.
Yes.
Like, oh, I'm not a self, but everyone else thinks they're a self, and that really pisses me off.
Well, talk to any neo-Advaitist, and you'll see how many ways it can be fucked up. Yeah. Yeah. Talk to Wayne Lickerman's devotees. They're like up the ass with that.
That's his name, really, Lickerman?
It is.
You can't use dualistic language.
This is what we're playing with.
Right.
Nothing
works.
Right. Nothing can work. It's not that you're a failure. It's just that it can't work.
There's no object constancy.
No.
Yeah.
There's no subject constancy. Yeah. And that's a very bizarre myth, because you're still you. Mm. What do you mean there's no subject constancy? I've been me since I can remember. And though I may have matured, in my case, ever so slightly.
I've gone backwards.
You've regressed. Yeah. I'm still me. And so it's like, wait. How is it possible that there's not subject constancy? I mean, it's crazy. Well, how is it possible? Fuck if I know. Maybe subject constancy is a myth borrowed from the absolute, which has no duration, but it's borrowed, and then there's the slightest seed of anthropomorphization, which then appears as if there's subject constancy.
But that's a genesis of some sort, then?
As an explanation, yeah. It appears, at least in the evocation, as a kind of a genesis. Mm-hmm. But what if it were spontaneous and not actually a genesis, and therefore could reveal itself to be untrue? What if the presumption of subject constancy, subject permanence, is a presently appearing mirage?
Well, that's maybe just a new seed that's been planted. I don't know. But whatever.
And I would say that is a really valuable kind of place or way to consider that what we insist upon as subject permanence is borrowed from a mystery that's completely unimaginable, non-referential, and only appears. And if we look at the durability of a moment, we can see that, oh my God, a moment doesn't last. It didn't come from a place. It didn't end up in a place. It has no duration in and of itself. So that subject constancy has to be borrowed.
I mean, it's like,
it can't be true.
It's like quantum strings or whatever, you know. If you look at them, if there were such a thing one by one, you get a variation all over the place.
Well, it's like Davy and Goliath. Davy, is God real?
Yeah.
Strings, yes?
Well, it's an averaging. I mean, you know, right? I mean, that's what it would seem to be.
Well, sure.
The most we can do is...
The confidence that you place in experience is an averaging.
Yeah.
Because nothing independently or meticulously is true. Because it's a soup, it's a mirage, a barrage of absolutely unimaginable and inarticulatable impressions, both apparently coming in and expressing out through language and feeling and, right, inner unencumbrance or inner turmoil. But to go to the real heart of it is to look at the mirage of subject permanence, subject constancy. Without subject constancy, where does the imagination of your life go?
Ooh. Yeah, if you're a new person every second.
How about toilet? You go to toilet each and every moment, and it's an efficient 1 gallon flush, but it's always running.
It's very moving thought.
It's very moving. Yeah. Yeah. Go to the myth of subject constancy, because without it, nothing else can stick. If you break the myth of subject constancy,
you're done. For
you're done.
It's over.
Yes? So, I would say that's a kind of a poignant way of looking at, metaphorically speaking, because it's too strange for words, what awake or realization actually is, what reality actually is. Fuck awake and fuck realization, because those always can be associated with, aspirant.
Non-awake, non-realization.
Or their opposite, which is not so.
That's bullshit.
Total bullshit. Once you get off the enlightenment train, you can really feel this. You can breathe much more deeply than if you've gone on a retreat with someone on a throne that is speaking to you from, right, from the throne of enlightenment. Get off that train, really.
So then awake doesn't need a subject to realize itself.
No. As a matter of fact, were there any subject, you could say that would be mutually exclusive of awake. The confidence placed in subject constancy is a myth and the apparent antithesis to what we're referring to as awake. And that if you broke the back of subject constancy, what the fuck is this?
So don't strive for anything. Don't strive for constancy or or what have you. It's, I mean, it's beyond...
Beyond any behavioral advice.
There is no young person, so where are you going? Yeah, yeah, there's no Jamie.
You can't give any advice here. There, it is not possible. I can't take your money, feed you, you know, vegetarian food, and give you any advice. You cannot give advice because you can't take any advice, and there's nothing you can do about it anyway, even if it was the best advice. Because we're looking at the myth of subject permanence now. What are you going to give up? You don't own anything. And there's not a pawn shop for a million miles around that would take your shit anyway.
I tried.
I know. Hey, dude, can I pawn like my like subjective nature? How much can I get if I give you my subjective nature? Let me check the book.
Well, we're loaded up on them right now. We don't really have...
No, our inventory is way too high on subjective nature. We just don't have any room in the safe. So you're going to go to the pawn shop, do the best you can to unload. Not going to work. Because the myth of subjective nature is not a genesis. It does not appear in space or time. It never actually occurred or could possibly occur. So you can't actually give it up. But you have to outwit whatever it is we're pointing at as the borrowed myth of subjective experience or subjective permanence. See that it's borrowed. See that you're borrowed. See that everything that is appearing in your present experience is just mist.
So then we get to simply noticing. Yes? Would that be a way to put it? Because what occurs to... Whatever. is what occurs.
Whatever the hell this is.
Really? Whatever the fuck I might happen to be? yeah.
Is that there's still this engine going on, you know? And it's more than just
yes
impressions.
So let's talk about it from the vantage point of prana. Makes it a little more impersonal.
All right.
The engine going on is prana, right? Subtle energy, subtle potency, radiant, right? Radiance, enjoying. Referencing yeah. In what we call mind. Yeah.
This holographic field that's constantly yes. created.
Right. So this could be seen then impersonally as pranic exaltation. Mm. Not even afflictive. Mm. Just pranic exaltation.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah. Well, you see how we become bereft when we characterize pranic exaltation as being an encumbrance, as being a disappointment, as being a behavioral path poorly chosen. Why not see that all pranic expression is exaltation?
In other words, what the fuck are you sitting still trying to quiet your mind for in meditation forever?
Yeah.
What a joy.
What a joy.
Yeah. This is like, look at me. I'm beautiful. And you're like, no.
Yeah.
I remember there was a character, Sufi Sam, that was the...
every second.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, right. All right, well, when you're done, we'll get right back to business. If you
Now, so this is a little different geometry, right? Yeah. So whatever it is that's appearing right now, not that there's a first, second, or third, but feel it without reference. But that does not mean that pranic expression, right, goes away. I mean, certain yogas like Tratak, staring on a candle, right, or gazing into the face of one's realized guru, is if you're lucky, supposed to bring you to the a realization or experience of the cessation of the striking of the prana on the frontal or neocortex. Again, but see, that's the same kind of myth of us wanting to get out from under the pressure of pranic expression and or the presumption of subject constancy.
Both the same.
Both the same.
But it has anything to do with anything.
So, right, now you can still be you. Pranic, right, symphonies can still be occurring. But that doesn't mean that you have to take delivery, prefer that they be something other than what they are, including however they may encourage you to behave next.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, why take ownership of them?
Right. So that pranic expressiveness occurs, does not insist on ownership.
Yeah.
It's the ownership that creates, right? The suffering, the despair.
Well, it's the same as owning the incumbents.
Yes.
They're the same family.
Same family. Same family. Yeah. It's like Hee Haw. It's like Hee Haw. Who's got a nice country song? The Hee Haw players are going to play "She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain When She Comes." Fantastic. So you see, all of this arising does not necessarily convey subject permanence, object permanence, identification or authorship or investment in pranic excitation, pranic expressiveness. And it's not necessary to quiet pranic expressiveness through meditation, through drug intervention, or even suicide. It's not necessary, unless, of course, it is necessary, and you have no choice but to quell your madness, but to really shut it off.
Yeah.
Right? So we get that.
Suicide is the best thing that is like great.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No. Suicide is, unfortunately, I think it's got a bad rap. It's got a bad rap. When at 7.3 billion, you'd think we should be talking it up.
Come on, folks.
Yeah, really. I think the Pope should get involved and start saying, hey, listen, you know, we're having a Vatican thing here. And by the way, suicide fucking rocks. You're going to go straight to Jesus. Yeah.
Forget Mary Kay parties. We're having a suicide party next week, my house.
Yeah, my house, suicide. That's right. Yeah, bring the weapon of your choice. And, you know, bring BYOC, as in bring your own casket.
Yeah. In case you have no balls and you're having a hard time doing it, we can always have someone
help.
Do it first, and then the last person can go.
Right.
I
think,
I've thought about it, because I don't have the balls to kill myself.
Why not start a new religion? Kevorkianism. Assisted relief from all suffering.
I think they did that in Latin America years ago.
Sure.
What was that guy?
It's been done somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
They do it all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Was it Texas, or was that something else?
Well, yeah.
Well, that's when they were being invaded, I think, right?
In, like, Europe or something. There's somewhere where it's, like, more legal to take the sodium, whatever.
Mm.
They, like,
Oregon.
They plan it all out. They have, like, their chocolate and, you know, make themselves comfortable, and then they shoot themselves up and go to sleep.
So we want to lean into, call it a quality of engagement, a quality of confidence, stepping back. Our perceptive electron orbit is a wide, wide open field There may be some fencing, but most of it's broken, and all the gates are open. So therefore, your present experience is less likely, hopefully, right? Less likely to be felt by you as an imposition, as an encumbrance, as a behavioral left to turn. And so this Teflon can be miraculously, easefully, effortlessly present in your experience with all and everything that appears to be arising.
Novelty.
Total, unabated novelty. Not just of the circumstances and events, meaning the objects, but the subject. Is pure novelty. Is that fun?
The more you pay attention, the more that really becomes obvious. I mean, I don't
know. Right.
It does seem like a progressive sort of, the more that you're really paying attention.
We're really kicking up the cutting edge here on observing the nature of consciousness, finding useful, not factual, but useful metaphors to tease out the nuance of present experience, to give a certain body of words or vocabulary to the curious nature of subjective constancy, to be able to feel or identify with what that might imply, and by being able to do that in each other's company, also get wind of freedom from the myth of subject constancy. I don't hear this shit anyplace else on the fucking internet.
No, we don't.
I just don't.
All the shit that's on there.
Speaking with a friend yesterday, I said, hey, let's look at this as kind of a pyramidal challenge. So at earlier, lower levels of the pyramid, I'm concerned with my behavior, my codependence. Right, my enmeshment, my addiction, or recovery from the lamentation of my crappy life, the repetitive nature of the relationships I keep getting into, where there's, you know, just fitful despair. So that's, you know, and even getting there, meaning going into recovery, going into therapy, going into something where you start actually taking inventory of your own fucking miserable life, is an incredible maturity.
A leap.
That's a leap. So that's at one level of the pyramid. Now let's say that we start doing something a little more sublime, like some meditation, or I take ayahuasca, or I'm starting to develop a broader, more refined experiential vocabulary for the curious nature of consciousness, the curious nature of subjective constancy, and somehow other forms of suffering that I used to just could not get out from under are not as rabid. Then we get to a level of conversation where we're not even interested in talking about the events and circumstances of our life, because we appreciate that while those vicissitudes go on as they do, there's just no point in reporting upon them.
They
have nothing. I have nothing to do with me. Now that's an interesting conversation. Now you tell me, where are you on the pyramid? When we can hang out and just not even refer to the vagaries, vicissitudes, the invaginations of what I call my miserable fucking life, you're already at a very, I would say, profound level of communication, of intimacy and refinement. Now where do we go? Well, we go here next. We're looking at, oh my God, the presence of what we call poignant and irrefutable experience being of the nature of what exactly? Time, space, birth, Big Bang, universe, What the fuck? And then we can look at, because we're articulating this, and I don't mean we're just speaking about it and taking notes. Articulating, like I suggested earlier, means we are sharing in a textural encounter of what the fuck awake might actually be. Then we can look at the curious metaphors of object permanence or subject permanence. See that the myth of subject permanence is arising presently, if at all. And peer beyond the perimeter of subject permanence. Fuck you, Adyashanti. You mouse. Fucking mouse. Oh, I'm sorry. Has my ego gotten the better of me?
I said with great affection.
Yeah, sure. But this is what I was saying to a dear friend from Santa Cruz that knows, you know, Peter Brown and his teachings very well. I said, Johnny, where do we go? What does the pyramid look like as our capacity to be in conversation, whether in a two-dimensional computer screen, face-to-face, right, or on a telephone call? How can we communicate with each other to appreciate, to look into, to revel in and relish absolute freedom from subject constancy, which is the miracle of you?
It's one of those questions that you don't have a glib answer to.
Thank goodness. Right? Thank goodness. When we're out of glib. Nice.
I like that the relevancy of the backstory, as I'm imagining the description, becomes much less significant.
Yeah, sure.
Any backstory about anything, which was torturing me in the past.
Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't quite have the teeth.
Nice.
Because ground the backstory has all kinds of assumptions.
Yep.
I'm reminded of presence.
Well, it's hallucination. It's hysteria.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not the way I am because of A through 6. And and I don't need to make 16 adjustments with a turn to the left in order to augment the trajectory.
We're not kidding around when we say nothing happened a moment before now.
Yeah. But yet, that when that occurs, not if.
When right.
that occurs,
sure.
I don't even need to stop it.
Nice.
Change it.
Bless you, kind sir.
Fix it. Quell it.
Yeah, yeah.
Amplify it.
You're not micromanaging the myth of your own consciousness.
That's what's cool. The encumbrance is not an encumbrance.
No.
The habitual revisiting of,
yes.
I know, and I know. I,
yes.
Really, I've got a handle on this.
It's yes.
Like, oh, there it is.
Sweet. Jesus.
Praise be the Lord.
And that's without cookies tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Sweet Jesus. I am released. I have been released. Holy Moses. I have been released.
Oh, jeez.
Like a friend of mine said, oh, I'm living my fears, not my dreams, like they say on Oprah.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah. Really. Why don't you call Oprah and ask for a couple mil?
She's the biggest psychopath out there.
Yeah. Living my fears. Look, look. Hey, check this out. There's no such thing as a subject.
Yeah.
You're not living doodle.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming.
Yes.